Golf Smarter number 317, published with a cold on January 24th, 2012, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Learning the perfect pitch leads to more gimmies with Chris Fry.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to Golf Smarter, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me, Fred.
I'm honored to have you because I've been reading your materials and watching your YouTube videos. And I was very excited to get you on the show.
Awesome. No, glad to be here, Fred, and I love pumping out that content.
Clearly you do, because you have a lot of it, and I wouldn't call you a senior citizen. You've not been around that long, but you have a lot of content you've developed.
Yes, that is true. The first thing usually my students say is, how old are you? So I'm used to that, and what I can tell them is, I may be young, but I have a ton of experience, especially in learning the golf swing and being able to communicate it effectively. And that's basically what I've based my whole career on since I was probably 16, 17 years old. I knew this is what I wanted to do.
Awesome. So you've been playing golf your whole life, and at some point you realized that I think I should be a teacher because the pro circuit is just...
Yes,
you definitely had to be dreaming about the pro circuit at some point.
I did. In fact, in high school, this is kind of where it all started. I was struggling to play. My coach left town. So what I did was I looked at the top 100 list of instructors in the country and just started emailing every single one within, a 4-hour drive. I had a few that responded, and the one that I ended up with was Craig Bunker. He was a top 100 at the time for John Jacobs Golf Schools up at Camelback. I was in Tucson, so I wasn't quite old enough to drive. I convinced my parents to take me up there at least twice a month.
Wow.
Just to work with this guy, and my parents jumped on board, and Craig and I, we grew really close. Even our families grew close together, and when it came to looking at colleges, Craig was confident he could help me get some scholarships and keep going towards that pro route, but I ended up really liking what I saw Craig doing on a day-in to day-out basis. So I said, Mr. Bunker, I want to teach, and I want you to help me with that. So he ended up hooking me up with the Arizona State University Professional Golf Management Program. So that's kind of how I started my teaching. I knew that I actually liked teaching a lot more than playing, and I thought I had a knack for it, especially being around Craig for so long.
Are we just going to gloss over the fact that your teacher's name was Bunker?
And he has a brother, too, that is a really good bunker instructor.
Oh, no, come on. Bunker the bunker instructor?
Oh, yeah, definitely. What a slogan, right?
I got to get him on the show. I just want to say, so this is Bunker the bunker instructor.
Yes, sir. That's a great name.
And when you said Mr. Bunker, I thought you said Mr. Bunker. Yes, we missed your bunker.
That is the goal, right?
Yeah, always. Enough of the frivolity here. Awesome. Good for you. And I'm glad that you are teaching and that you have a passion for it, because that's what we're always looking for, passionate instructors who have the experience and know what they're talking about. But you're also taking advantage of your writing skills, and you've been doing it for Dixon Golf. I've been reading your stuff in their Dixon newsletter.
Yes.
Are you also a user of the Dixon golf balls?
I have to say I am. I'm a user of the Dixon golf balls, the Dixon belt buckles, hats, everything. But I do have to say the Fireball is probably one of the best balls I've ever played.
I'm not going to argue with that. It seems I play the Earth ball all the time.
Okay.
And they sent me a couple promotional of the Fireballs because, this is $80 a box. This is not an inexpensive golf ball. So I'm not going to be buying them, but they sent me some, and I'm telling you, every time I pull one out of my bag, I have lower scores. I don't know what it is about this ball, but I always play better with that golf ball.
I think it has a lot to do with you realize if you lose this ball, you're losing a few bucks. So,
but you know what? That's the thing about Dixon golf balls. I never feel guilty about losing them. I mean,
exactly,
the whole eco-friendly
right?
thing, and that's why I really love the Dixon golf ball product for what it does on the golf course, but the fact that it's an eco-friendly golf ball is why I have it on golfsmarter.com and promoting it. And even if somebody joins Golf Smarter, they can get some a box of balls discounted with the Golf Smarter logo. And, you know, I just think if with a billion golf balls lost each year, why send all these harsh metals into the land, you know, out into the rough and into the water? And it's just it's a great product, and they play comparable to Titleist balls and to the Bridgestone balls that I used to play.
I agree. They the common misconception with these Dixon balls, because I've been out on the field with Dixon quite a bit, doing contests, doing Beat the Pro events, is everybody comes up and says, what are these, biodegradable? No, they're not.
But no, they're not. That's the first question everybody asks.
Exactly. The beauty of it is they're made out of materials that are easily recyclable, which you probably know, and they're doing great things with them. My students, we're on a program where they can recycle golf balls by giving them to me. I bring them down to Dixon, and then they get a credit towards their next purchase of Dixon golf balls. Then Dixon will take those balls and turn them into the rubber on playgrounds and good things like that, so they're keeping those balls pumping through and putting them into good use after they have been recycled.
I've got to believe that you've played a lot with the Pro V1s.
Yes, Pro V1X is my ball before the Dixon Fireball.
Ooh, you caught yourself there. And how do they compare to one another? Because personally, and I don't know why I'm the only person that's ever noticed this, I will not play a golf ball that stands for provisional.
Ooh, I like that.
You know, how can you call a golf ball Pro V? To me, that just says provisional. Okay, go lose this because you have to buy some more. But I know that people, even players who shouldn't be, there's two things these players shouldn't be doing. They shouldn't be playing Pro V1s, and they shouldn't be playing from the back tees. But they think they can.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What is it about those Pro V1s that makes people think that, well, I just said I play better with the Fireball.
I just think so many tour pros and those commercials with those Titleists, I play Pro V1X, I play Pro V1. I think the common, you know, thing that public golfers will do is say, oh, well, I should probably play that if the best in the world are playing that. But that's typically not the case. You need to be fit for your golf ball to maximize ball flight, distance, you know, roll, spin, things like that. I do want to say, though, the Fireball reacts just as good as a Pro V1X, but it seems softer and the cover is stickier. So I feel like around the greens, I even have more control. So if not better, the Fireball is off the tee, it definitely beats the Pro V1X around the green.
Wow. That's a heck of an endorsement. You said something. We frequently on this program, we'll talk about getting fitted for golf clubs. You talked about getting fitted for golf balls.
Yes, definitely. There's a lot of good systems, and I know Dixon's working on one too, to get fit for golf balls. But you don't need to go the in-depth route on all these specifics. It's just we can just really by getting your swing speed, we can really fit a decent ball towards that swing speed based on the layers of the golf ball, the compression, and things like that.
What will the playing the wrong golf ball do to your game?
A lot of times, if your swing speed is slower than it should be and you're playing a Pro V1X, you're not going to be able to compress all those layers on that golf ball. So really, you're not going to get that trampoline effect off your club face, in turn losing distance.
So I want to pursue this for a moment, if you don't mind. We wanted to we're talking about the Fire, and Dixon has three balls. They have the Wind, which is their extreme distance ball.
Mm-hmm.
Their Earth ball, which is what I guess they call their tournament quality ball.
Yes.
And the Fire, which is their top of the line, top of the market ball. I don't know what the official term is for the Fire ball. and how do they compare? If you're playing the wrong ball, I understand if you shouldn't be playing the Pro V1 or the Fireball, you're not going to get what you want out of it. But how do you determine which is the correct ball on the other side, you know, for the average player?
So for the average player, and I've done a few ball fittings for Dixon over at the PGA Tour Superstore, and really what I ask them first is, what do you want your ball to do? And the first thing a lot of people say is, I want distance. So then I immediately think wind ball. If I see their swing speed is, you know, 100 plus with the driver, then I might say, well, let's look at the fireball. Let's talk about, you know, your handicap if you're more advanced. But distance is the wind ball for sure. Earth ball, like you said, is more of the tournament caliber golf ball. Those guys that maybe aren't quite close to scratch. And that's kind of what I'll fit them into if they want to say that they want more control of the golf ball. They want to shape it a little bit better, because what that ball is going to do with the dimple pattern and the way it's built is it's going to react a little bit more off the club face in terms of the spin. But the wind, for those guys that just want plain distance, isn't going to react with much side spin. So you're going to hit it a little bit straighter, but it's also going to feel a little bit more solid. It's going to be a little bit more firmer, and it's going to rock it off the club face, especially for those slower club head speed guys.
And that's on maybe 14 of your shots over a round. And these are the people who are generally shooting in the 90s and above.
Yes, exactly.
And they're talking about 14 shots off the driver. They want the distance. But then, okay, say you get that extra, what, 5 yards? What kind of distance addition are you going to get out of that?
A proper fitting, and don't quote me on this, but I've seen...
I don't have to. You're saying. You're right here on,
good
on
point,
the podcast.
Brett. I mean, I've seen guys with the wind get upwards of like 10 to 15 yards per drive. But keep in mind, it's going to relay into the fairway too, if you have the correct fitting ball, especially the wind for distance. From the fairway, you're going to get more distance out of your irons and your fairway woods as well. Just because, like I said, that side spin's not going to be there. The ball's not going to be as soft. So it is going to have that rocket effect off of the club face.
So let's look at this in another way. Let's say you get 10 to 15 more yards out of one ball from the next. Now you've got 165 yards. Instead of 165, you have 150 yards into the green.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now distance doesn't matter. You're hitting your 6 iron instead of your 5 iron type of situation. Now we need to get more accurate.
Right.
Distance doesn't matter on that second shot, does it?
And, it does not.
And then we get to the green and you got to start putting. Do you want a rock hard ball that gives you more distance on your putting?
It depends. If I'd say 90% of the time, no. But the it's a give or take. I mean, if nobody's looking, throw that ball out, take a new one in your pocket and put it on the green. No, I'm just kidding. But
you're not supposed to carry two balls in your pocket at all time? Wait a minute.
I do
only because to me it's like, well, if I have one in my pocket, then I'm not going to lose this one.
See, I'm the opposite. I don't let any of my clients have two balls in their pockets. If you pull one out, you have to be confident enough that you're not going to lose it. You're going to hit the fairway. You're going to hit the green. That safety net feeling of, oh, I've got another ball in my pocket, does not breed confidence at all.
Okay. You've convinced me. For the next couple rounds, I am not going to have two balls in my pocket. I'm only going to have one.
At least give it a shot.
Yeah. I've been doing it for such a long time and never even thought, no one's even suggested it to me that, what, don't do that.
No way. Never.
Never even thought of it. So yep. Yeah, so the distance thing, I go out to the driving range. I see guys just bring a driver that's the first club they start swinging. It's like, what are you doing?
Oh gosh, don't even get me started about that.
Yeah, and it goes back to a show we did recently with the folks from Score Golf. He said, "Give me 10 feet closer over 10 yards farther every day of the week."
Oh, that's a great quote.
Well, they use it. So you could go to scoregolf.com and check them out, because you should actually go look at their wedges. They have these Score Golf 4161 wedges that are too much of a commercial today, Fred. Okay, so so listen, I think it brings us to an article of yours that I read online about perfect pitch. And yes. Now that we've got our extreme distance, now that we've hit the ball so far, we're still short of the green by 5, 2, 10, 15, 20 yards. And the flag is in a precarious position because of the slant and all the undulation on this green. And the goal is one putt, right? We want to get the ball as close as we can from off the green, so all we have to do is tap it in.
Just a little kick in.
And I'm telling you, it's harder than driving.
I agree. I definitely agree. And it's more important in most cases. It can save you. It can save you those high scores, but it can also give you those birdie attempts.
And I think your playing partners would be far more impressed if you can get it near the pin than if you can get it past them on the tee box.
No, I definitely agree with that. And that's why we have a setup where we do our lessons. We have these boxes that are about a foot wide of an opening that are placed 10, 20, 30, all the way up to 120 yards all over the driving range in hidden spots, because this is where we can always lower handicaps. No matter if the driver's off or not, we're going to lower handicaps if we can get you to be laser-like with those distances.
I want to take a moment here to let everybody know that this episode is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audible would like to provide Golf Smarter listeners with an opportunity to try Audible with a free audiobook of your choice from their enormous library. Chris, do you ever listen to audiobooks?
I do, Fred. In fact, I just last week downloaded a book that changed the way I do business. It's called The 4-Hour Workweek by Timothy Ferriss.
Really? Have you already started listening to it? I'm curious. I'm not familiar with that book. Tell me. I should be familiar with that book. I've been living that life for a long time. Which
well,
is,
I mean,
actually, my wife is not thrilled about my 4-hour work week. You playing golf again? Tell me about this.
It's just a book that basically talks about how you can maximize your effectiveness in terms of business into a short window each week. And it really, applying to golf instructors, it's really effective because it tells you how to focus on the students that help bring in most of your income, the students that you want to teach so that you're more happy and you can provide more to the students and then breed more students that are just like them as well.
Awesome.
Yes, it's a great book.
It is a good book for even if you're not a golf instructor?
Even if you're not a golf instructor, it's good for any kind of business. He talks about he started an energy drink business. It goes from energy drinks to golf instructors to everything in between.
Well, there you go. That's a phenomenal recommendation. I appreciate it. So please get the audiobook. If you want to try that one, it's been recommended already by Chris Fry. You can get that or anything of your choice. They've got a huge library at audible.com/golfsmarter. And if you want to sign up the first one is free. And all you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Thanks for the recommendation, Chris. I appreciate it.
Oh, definitely.
Let's get back to that perfect pitch. Let's get back to how, okay? Let's pretend right now we're 5 yards off the green. There is a it's not short grass between here and there. There's a little bit of rough, so we can't putt it from there, which usually, what is that called, a Texas wedge? Sometimes you want to putt from there, and that's not a terrible thing, I would think, for most amateurs. But you've got a thick grass and a sprinkler head in the way between you and the green, right? But yet the pin is only – it's a red pin and you're in the front. So you've got a short distance to get onto the green, but you have to get it in the air. And you have a short distance for the ball to get on the green and to the pin. It is – it for me – well – I get terrified of this shot. Help me. How am I going to get better with that shot?
First of all, Fred, what are you doing in a spot like that? I mean, we got to learn how to miss the ball in the right spots, and then we'll go from there. But
well, I'm trying to hit my shot to the green. I miss hit it, and I end up short of the green. And frankly, I've seen that on the Golf Channel. I've seen the pros do that.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Especially when you're pin hunting and you have that green light and you're feeling good, and then you miss hit the shot and it comes up a little short. You're left with a shot like that.
So you're telling me I should just go for the middle of the green every time, don't go pin hunting?
It depends. But I have a solution. So you're in this position. I did an article for PGA.com a while back. When there were the PGA Tours at the Accenture Match Play down in Tucson, and those greens are just really difficult. So when you're in a situation like that, you do three things. The first thing is pick your trajectory. So like you said, there's some thick grass. We can't go low. So the next step is, can we go medium? And that just means a medium trajectory at the pin. And then if you can't go medium, then you go high. That's if you're going over a bunker to a tucked pin, things like that. Most often, low is the way to go. But this situation, it seems like medium is what we'll do. So what I want you to do is think about how you can produce a medium shot. And then from there...
What do you mean by medium?
The medium trajectory. I'd say
the height of how high the ball goes from the club face?
Exactly. Low would be like knee height. Medium maybe chest. And then a high trajectory would be above your head.
Okay. Thank you.
So say we're going medium. The second thing you need to choose is your landing zone. And for some reason, I'm a visual guy. I always see a hula hoop sized circle that's red, probably because I played too much Tiger Woods golf growing up. But I see this red circle that I want to land it on. And when we're going a waist high medium trajectory shot, we're usually going to get a good amount of roll, maybe half of the distance traveled. So on a 20 yard shot, if I land at 10 yards, a medium trajectory will get you 10 yards of roll. So
say that one more time.
If you're going a medium trajectory, which is waist high on a pitch shot, usually as far as the ball carries, say it's 10 yards, it's going to roll out that same distance, so 10 more yards.
On a medium?
Yes.
Okay, not necessarily on a low or high.
Low is going to be 25% carry, 75% roll.
Okay.
So.
And high is just the opposite of that?
Just the opposite, 75% carry, 25% roll.
That's a great way to think about it.
Yes. And I mean, it works very well. I have a lot of analytical students who want exact concepts and ideas when they're on the course so that they don't have to think as much about feel and things like that. Now, there are feel players, which I might work with them a little bit differently on this type of shot. But in general, this works for everybody.
So you must be a huge advocate of visualization.
I am, partly because when I would travel up here, like I told you earlier, to see the Bunker Brothers, I would stop by and see Dr. Paula King, who is a sports psychologist. And we found out that I was a visual learner, and we used my visual capabilities to make me a better golfer. So I relay that into my teaching.
Okay. All right. Because yes. I know that when I am a greenside like that, and I just try to visualize let's just say I've had more success when I visualize the flight and the path of the ball than if I don't. Not saying that I have a lot of success, but the times that I have had success, I know that I've really concentrated on seeing the ball in flight before I hit it and where I want it to go, where I want it to land, how it's going to roll once it gets there.
Yes, and I mean, it like you said, it's not going to happen every time, but it definitely improves your chances of pulling off the shot. And even if you don't hit it perfect, you've kind of prepared yourself so that if you do miss hit it, you're going to look like you knew what you were doing anyway.
And once the ball lands,
yes,
the path that it takes on the green, is that going to, should we visualize that as different than as if we were putting from the spot where it's landing?
You know, I think you can envision it as the same as if you were putting. So if you've got a left to right break, when that ball lands on the green, it's going to break about 5 feet to the right. You just move your landing circle up to the left and let it break down just like a putt.
But the ball's going to have much more speed coming in at that point, even if it's a high pitch. It's going to have more speed coming in than if it just leaves your club face. So isn't that going to take some of the breakout?
It is. Obviously, the faster that you hit a putt, the less break is going to happen. So like I said, take that into account as well, that the ball is going to be coming off a little bit hotter once it hits the green.
So, and do you, depending on, I love picking the brains of golf teachers because I'm not paying for it.
the invoice is in the mail.
Well, it's great talking to you, Chris. Thanks so much. Good luck on getting this show published. So, So now let's talk about the difference between the low being the ball's going to be in the air about knee high versus the high, which the ball's going to be in the air above my head.
Waist.
Well, the high is above my head, right?
Oh, the high is above your head, yes.
Okay. Am I using the same club for both of those shots?
No, you do not.
Some people say, yeah, just use your sand wedge for everything around the green, and some say your pitch and...
Definitely not. I would say I like the 8-iron for the low. What you do with the 8-iron is you choke up on it, lift the heel of the 8-iron up into the air, because typically when you mishit this kind of shot,
At address?
Yes, at address.
So you're standing it on the toe at address?
Yes, exactly. Standing on the toe, it's going to feel extremely funny.
Yeah.
It's going to feel like you're not going to be able to hit it very well, but it works. What it does is the heel can grab the grass and turn the club face, chunk the club face, and it just manipulates it too much. So what we do is we get rid of it. We lift the heel up, and then we make a putting stroke, and that produces the low shot.
I tell you, the reason I have so little confidence in this shot, especially the low one, is because I chunk it. I always hit the club head way before the ball,
mm-hmm.
and either, like you said, it gets caught, or it just sends it flying across the green.
Yes, and the second thing that's extremely important doing this shot is you want to choke up. I almost choke up so that my hands are on the shaft, but you choke up to the shaft, and that brings you in really close to the golf ball, just like you would almost a putting stroke, and then that will eliminate those chunky shots too where you hit behind the golf ball.
What about your feet position? Are you in a normal, like say, putting stance, or do you open your stance, bringing your forward foot and opening your body to your target?
I play this just like a putt. So if you have a quirky putting stance, go ahead and use it. But in general, you do not open up your body. You align to the target or to your landing zone and make a stroke just like you would a putt. So opening your stance with this one is something I don't recommend.
Mm. Okay. And then now let's take it to – that was the 8-iron – the low trajectory, which means it's going to be in the air for 25% and roll for 75.
Yes.
Okay, let's do the opposite. Now the ball, we want to get it high up in the air because we want it to be in the air for 75% of our distance and then roll only 25. A very difficult shot, a Phil Mickelson magical shot, right?
Yes.
Tell me about how you address it there and what club you're using.
So for this shot, you can use a sand wedge 56 degree or even a 60 degree. What I found, and I like to show this to my students, is the sweet spot on a 60 degree is a lot smaller because it's so open. The degree of loft is so high that the sweet spot actually shrinks. So I recommend 60 for my lower handicapper, better player, but I recommend the sand wedge for those higher handicappers that need that bigger sweet spot. Then from there, the stance is a little open. And the reason I like the stance to be open is I like to put weight on the front foot, which is the lead foot. In my case, I'm a right-handed golfer, so I put about 70% of my weight on my left foot, and I keep it there. So having my open stance and my weight on my left foot promotes a sharper angle of attack into the golf ball. That sharper angle is what's going to give us the height and the spin to pull off the shot.
And to get this spin, is this the same type of spin that you want if you're taking a full swing, meaning you hit the ball, then the ground to pinch the ball into it? I mean, you're not really hitting it that hard to get that kind of spin, are you?
You know, you're exactly right. You want to hit the ball, then the ground. You want to pinch it. And that's why I promote having the weight on the front foot, because if you keep that weight on the front foot, your low point, meaning where your club's going to bottom out, is going to be the exact same spot every time. So you keep your weight on the front foot, and you're going to be able to pinch the ball first and then go into the ground. Now, keep in mind, these high shots, you're going to need to have a lot of acceleration. So you are going to be swinging a little bit harder than you would for this bump and run or even a lower trajectory shot. So it is a bigger swing, more loft, it is going to produce a lot more spin.
All right. Now, I'm just want to wrap this part of it up. I am so excited to get to the putting green right now to work on this, because you've given me a couple. Just lifting the heel is huge. I want to go practice mm-hmm. that. Let's take the last one. Now we've got a middle green, the flag in the middle of the green. We are 10 yards off the green. So we want the ball to travel a long way on the ground. I suspect you want to get this over onto the green in the air, and then so 50% in the air, 50%, right?
Yes, 50% in the air, 50% roll.
And tell me about your address and, again, your stance.
So this is going to be somewhat similar to the high shot. Mm-hmm. We're just going to change our club. I recommend, and then this is for the lower handicappers, the sand wedge. And then the higher handicappers, the pitching wedge. So we're going to be making close to the same swing we made with the high shot. We've just changed the club to lower the ball flight. So open stance, weight forward. You're going to hear me say weight forward a lot of times in my instruction.
I saw that on one of your videos too.
Yes, definitely. It always promotes low point control, which means you're going to hit the ground where you mean to every time. So like I said, you take a pitching wedge, say you're a 10 to 15 handicapper, take that pitching wedge, put the ball in the middle of the stance, slightly open stance, and 70% of your weight on your front foot. Make the same stroke that you would for the high shot, and watch the ball roll into the hole.
Yeah, sure. Clunk. Or next to it. And again, this is an opportunity to get your friends to be more impressed with that shot than with your crappy drive.
Yes, it can redeem you every time.
It will, and that's where you're going to lose the strokes. Come on, guys, that's where you're uh-huh. going to lose the strokes. It's going to be on the green and around the green, not off the tee. If you golf smarter, then around the tee, it doesn't matter how many mistakes you make.
I agree.
I can't believe how many times I've had a par off of a crappy drive, and when I've had a crappy drive and tried to go for it, right, then I have double mm-hmm. bogeys. So yes. It's like that crappy drive, just get myself back into position to put the ball onto the green, you know, and then golf smarter. It's just not the name of the show. It's a way of life for me.
I definitely agree. And that's why I believe in course management practice and things like that, because my nickname growing up was the Scrambler. I was in the cactus, I was in bunkers, I was you name it, but I was able to scramble my way on the green, just short of the green, in positions where I could get up and down and save some strokes.
There you go. Awesome. Yep. Well, listen, I'm not done with you, but I think you're done with me. You've got a lesson to get to. I want to talk more before we started recording. You were telling me that you do some work with TPI instructors. We've had multiple TPI instructors on the show, but I've not had a student of a TPI instructor talk about what the Titleist Performance Institute can do for your physicality on the golf course. So I'd love to tap into that with you. Two more articles that I've read of yours. Thanks for sending them along, and everyone can find them. Two things that really jumped out at me, and I think we should talk about this next, is the winter tricks to keep your game hot. Because
yes.
You live in Arizona, so you don't have – well, your off season would be summer but when the rest of us are playing, but most of us don't get to play 12 months a year. And then the back nine blow-up, I thought that was such a fascinating topic that we need to spend a lot of time on. So can I get you to come back to a Golf Smarter for Members Only program next week?
Oh, of course, Fred. I'd love to elaborate on some of those articles. I think it's just going to help out your members tremendously.
Well, then let me just say to anyone who's listening, and to you specifically who's listening, here's an opportunity. If you connected with anything that Chris said today, which I have done, come on back next week. Join Golf Smarter for Members Only and get access to over 300 episodes. Right now, if you're not a member, then you only have access to the last couple of shows. But this will take you back to all the episodes that are evergreen in content, meaning that you can listen to episode number one of Zen Golf with Dr. Joe Parent, and it's going to be just as powerful today as it was when I first asked him the questions. It's Golf Smarter for members only at golfsmarter.com. But, Chris, thank you very much for allowing me to promote everything I've ever promoted in my life on this episode.
My pleasure, Fred.
I wish I was getting paid to do this. It would be so much better, but then I wouldn't be able to spend 10 minutes on one product. But even more so, thank you so much for your lessons. I thought they were very valuable, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Well, of course, Fred. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so don't say I didn't tell you so. This week is the huge annual PGA merchandise show in Orlando, and one of the big stories that will be coming out of that event is the emergence of the Score Golf 4161 wedges that I've been telling you about. And you can tell people you heard it here at Golf Smarter first, because just last week, Golf Digest put these clubs on their hot list for 2012. The last rounds that I've been playing, every person in my group has asked to put these clubs in their hands so they could admire them themselves. Here's your chance to put them on your must-do list. Whether you order online or over the phone, use the checkout code GOLFSMARTER11 and get a 10% discount on your order. Golf Smarter members get a full 15% off. And you have to get that code at the Golf Smarter for Members Only website. So it's worth your entry into Golf Smarter for Members Only just to get that extra 5% from them. For everything you need to know, click on the Score Golf banner on the members page at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.